Welcome to episode 31 of UiTech People. Today we have Nick Pincone and Matt Davis to be on. We're talking all things security. Hope you enjoy this episode. All right, welcome to episode 31 of UiTech People. Today we have two people on the show. We've got Nick Pincone and Matt Davis. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thanks.
All right, guys, well, we've got both of you here, so I know you guys have joined up. You're now running a company together. You also work together. Start with you, Nick. Nick, who are you for the people that don't know about you?
So I graduated with a Bachelor of Computer Science, and then I started working at a university, the same university I graduated from, for a few years as a web developer, primarily just, you know, Java and Spring with Oracle Database. Did a few web services as well, and then after a few years, I decided to move to Newcastle area. It's I know it's pretty cold, and I just wanted to get out of there. And I really kind of was looking for a lifestyle that was sort of the beach and the city kind of combination. And Newcastle just had a lot of job opportunities, so I got a job at Boeing as a software engineer.
Yeah,
moved down. I've been there for about 8 years now.
8 years at Boeing.
8 years at Boeing. Yeah,
very nice.
And been doing a lot more DevOps stuff more recently.
Yeah.
And concurrent to that, I've kind of started a few small businesses. I partnered up with a tax accountant quite a few years ago.
Yeah.
And she's a brilliant tax accountant, and she wanted to have a web service, a product written. So I wrote a series of integrated web applications that I've sort of been doing, and it's been successful ever since. It's a great product. And more recently, Matt and I have partnered up to do a, cybersecurity services, basically. And we're really excited about that. It's something I'm really into right now.
Yeah, we'll dig into that for sure. Matt, give us a quick overview. Who are you?
So very similar to Nick, actually. Left at the same university, University of New England.
Yeah.
Studied there, got my Bachelor of Computer Science with honours. Straight out of there, got a job at the university.
Yeah.
I was there for a bit longer than Nick. Was there for about 8 years.
Wow.
Java web applications, PHP, whole range of different technologies, Perl, name I've probably written a web app in it. And then about 3 years ago, I moved down here to work for Boeing as well as a software engineer, doing a bit in the DevOps space as well.
Nice.
In my free time, just doing a bit of web development, Angular, PHP, Laravel, and then running some pen tests on a few sites for a few clients.
Yeah, very nice. Yeah. So you guys met back at the university?
Yeah, very first day of uni, actually.
Oh, wow.
About 15-ish years ago.
Like about 15 years.
Had a pretty good friendship since then,
15 years, guys. 15 years, and you're still mates, and you're going into business together. That's a decent crack, right?
So we kind of found that, we've always worked full-time jobs ever since we graduated, but we found that we had a lot of sort of interest in doing other work outside of our full-time jobs.
Yeah.
We always had a lot of passion for just learning new technologies and, you know, just trying to break free from some of the restrictions of the full-time job. It gives you a bit more freedom. So we just thought it was a natural thing just to team up, I guess.
To do something. Yeah. And then you've teamed up to create Pincone Web Cybersecurity.
Yeah, that's right. So we've kind of been doing a lot of web development for, you know, just kind of freelance style, just anyone that just needs help getting a website developed or maintaining it, that type of thing. But it really came about when we had somebody who had a website that needed, had some weird problems going on with it. So we did the investigation, found out there was actually a vulnerability that was just being exploited, basically. And so we offer a service now that allows us to people pay us to penetration test the website. So we're effectively doing ethical hacking. We're testing the vulnerabilities of a website. And then we generate a really comprehensive report, you know, typically about 20 pages long.
Yep.
And it contains sort of three sections. There's an executive summary in there. That's sort of the most valuable thing to the business owner. They can read that. It's really in layman's terms, lets them understand what it is that we've found that impacts their business. And then the other sections are more related to the technical details, and it's something that they can take to their development team and get them to fix the problems if it's, you know, cost effective for them. Alternatively, we can fix it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So you do that, so you can do both the testing and then obviously help them out in the, on the dev side and get and fix what's needed. So I guess it's a pretty nice one too, right there.
Yeah.
What sort of companies are your typical clients?
Just small businesses, mostly.
Yeah, they've mainly just been small businesses. So they've
startups.
Yeah, they're mostly startups, or some of them, you know, been around for a few years. They've all had some established web product.
Yeah.
Or actually, some of them have they're just about to launch a web product that someone else has developed.
Yeah.
And they just need it. It's kind of the equivalent, I guess, like when you go to buy a house or if you own a house and you need a pest or building inspector to come and just an independent thing to let you know that, you know, what you've got.
Yeah. And just like a pest and building inspection, you sort of just see, you know, these are the things that are critical. You wouldn't buy this house unless this was fixed. These are things that, you know, you probably want to get looked at some point. Not a showstopper. Yeah. But,
and for those that have had their business website running for quite some time, you know, over time, vulnerabilities just creep in. It gets misconfigured. Technologies get old. They need to be updated. We let them know specifically what the vulnerabilities are there. And so they can get those things upgraded or patched. Or whatever.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I guess just managed. If you've got something you're aware of, hey, we know we've got this vulnerability, we'll just keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
If someone exploits it, you know, we know how they're getting in.
I guess it's a nice service to offer staffs and small businesses because obviously if you're a bigger company, right, you can bring in testing companies and, you know, come in and do pen testing and things like that. But it's a costly exercise for a big organization.
It is, yeah.
So it's not something that a lot of small businesses would have access to. They would think, oh, no, if I was to have somebody do run security, you know, a security scan through my site, like a genuine in-depth scan, like it's probably out of my price range, but you guys, I guess, are bringing that service to the SMB businesses.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And, you know, we're a small startup, so we don't have a lot of overheads in terms of we don't rent a big building, for example. We don't have you know, any major overheads that we work from home office. So you know, we effectively can do it pretty cheap. Like the price that we ask for is really the cost of doing it.
Yeah, nice. I imagine you're probably too cheap.
Oh, well.
So, being a startup, we're trying to get customers in and we're just sort of trying to find out the best value we can provide for, the most cost-effective way we can.
Yeah, the price that we offer is very cheap compared to the amount of time that it takes us to do that. And it varies, actually. Some of the businesses we've had to work for have presented us with a huge web application and it's taken a very long time for us to go through. You know, we normally test about 45 to 50 things like these categories that we go through.
Yeah.
And that's just the standard and then it's about what we see and what we just respond to what we're seeing in the code.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah. So it can take a very long time. But you know, well, I really enjoy it. So money is just a way for me anyway, to sort of confirm that what we're doing is valuable to people. And I always just want to be learning things that are valuable to the society, I guess, to the community.
Yeah, that's really nice. Well, you know, I guess you guys obviously both come from a dev background and both into the DevOps space and now both into sort of security as well. Is it just you mentioned the enjoyment or the interest out of security that's got you? Because obviously security is a newer but growing area.
Yeah.
Is it just a general interest that took you guys down this path?
Yeah. I remember going through uni, Matt was really passionate about that type of thing. Like the... Matt would be there kind of hacking into people's, or some of our friends were just programming together.
Just sort of trying to find out what sort of vulnerabilities they had in their assignments and things.
Yeah, right.
That's sure, interesting. You can't do things this way because someone can go and do this. But it sort of started back then, didn't it?
It did, yeah. I mean, if you look back in hindsight, there was definitely hints of that interest there. I guess all throughout our careers, though, we've always had, web development is our background, so we purely offer web cybersecurity because that's what we know.
Yeah.
But security has always been, you know, one of the forefront requirements in developing web applications.
Right? Definitely.
Yeah. So it's not like it's been absent in our careers. It's just now that we've really started to focus on that because there's been a growing need from our customers when we've been doing our web development specifically on that.
Yeah, security's not new, right? By any means, it's just there's a growing emphasis on it, I guess, because there are more vulnerabilities around now.
Yeah, yeah, we're a lot more passionate about the cybersecurity aspect of the web development. And I think that it's important for us, we work a full-time job and you really need to be passionate about something to do a long day at work and then come home and do
yeah.
more of something. So that type of work, I'll call it work, it really energizes. It's interesting. Yeah,
it's interesting. Yeah. And for me, it's like I'm always a big fan of doing puzzles. For me, finding a vulnerability is like cracking a puzzle, right? Like I'm breaking into a lockbox or something.
So we're just talking, I guess, that rise in the a need for security for companies, small businesses, more vulnerabilities out there now. And I think more companies starting to become aware of, hey,
definitely.
I can't just set up a WordPress site and leave it there and not update it ever, ignore the updates, ignore anything.
Yeah.
If that's what they've done or if they've built custom software, obviously more vulnerabilities do creep in over time. You guys are in this space. What have you seen the changes in security or the awareness of it over the last few years?
I guess for a start, the awareness has definitely grown.
Yeah,
definitely. Attacks like WannaCry, they spread a lot of fear and so many companies were affected by that.
Yeah.
And it cost companies, millions of dollars?
Yeah, not just in the cost of getting rid of, calling in experts or getting, new equipment, whatever they have to do, but it's also in the loss in productivity as a major. I think they estimate about, 75% of the cost of a cyber attack is in the loss in productivity to the organization not being able to do work and not being able to deliver value to their customers.
And I think that awareness has sort of changed attitudes as well towards how people are dealing with security. It's not just about preventing. People know that, hey, you know what, we're going to get attacked. It's going to happen. And how can we monitor it? How can we recover? You've got this concept of like a chaos monkey where you've got your own team that's trying to break your own stuff, do your pen testing. You just assume that you're going to get broken into and how are we going to fix it and recover without our customers even knowing?
And it really shows, like, especially in some of the customers, that one where, his business got attacked, the hacker went rampant. Like, it wasn't just his business. He got into
Netflix.
eBay account and things like that. And, purchasing stuff. And he wasn't prepared. He didn't have a plan. And he was frantic. He said it was extremely stressful, and it took a lot longer. The longer the person's in there, the more damage they're doing. If you have a plan in advance, you can definitely mitigate a lot of those costs.
And a bit of a proactive approach as a reactive.
Yeah.
How do you guys work? So the clients you're working with, are you helping them with like proactive approaches to, hey, you're obviously coming reactively, like having a look at, what's going on, but then trying to help them set up proactive plans?
So us going and doing the vulnerability assessments, that's sort of like us being proactive, right? We're coming in, we're saying, here's what we found. You've got all these things. Fix these ones. We got to be proactive, add some monitoring, make sure that, if someone does get in, you know what they're doing, set up multi-factor authentication, right? So that, things are harder to get into.
There's a whole range of, it depends on the application, I guess. Most of our stuff is actually being proactive. We're working with people before something's happened.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
I guess that's probably more enjoyable from your perspective rather than trying to be, have to go in and try to fix somebody else's mess.
Yeah, that, it was quite actually stressful. I really felt for example, the one where the hacker was just into everything. And even when you get them out, they've put in so many things, UI keys just to be really annoying. Just when you've changed all the passwords and that, they're still doing
stuff. Yeah, they're still, they get things back in straight away.
Just resetting passwords just randomly. It's
hard to get them out once some people are in.
And what are you seeing? Are you seeing the most of it just, is it financial gain? Is it why the hacks that you have seen and the clients you've worked with? Is there, you mentioned the people who are in there just being a pest. Are you seeing it just more so from, people are doing it for fun and games or financial gain or?
Well, I think it's a combination. Yeah. I think some people are in it just to see what they can do. There's a lot of bots out there that just look for vulnerabilities across whatever they can find.
Yeah.
And if they get something back that says, oh, this site's got some vulnerability, they might look into it and go, oh, this is someone I can get financial gain out of or I can do something out of. And they go and do that. So there's a lot of sort of exploration using bots to try and find things. And then there's, they pick targets.
Yeah.
Whereas I guess some people are just doing it for fun.
I think it's, in our case, I think it's rare that there's specifically someone that has a grudge on somebody and they're trying to do that. It's kind of an attack of opportunity maybe because they've had something that's been identified as a vulnerability.
That's interesting. What have you seen? What's the biggest, outside of, what are you seeing? What's the biggest challenges that have been going on that you've seen in the security space over the last few years?
Definitely the awareness.
Yeah, definitely awareness.
The tooling has changed.
Oh, the tooling, yeah. so many more sophisticated attacks too. No one's ever going to talk about a DOS attack anymore, right? It's about distributed, you know, denial of service now.
Yeah.
So much more sophistication, so much stronger tools. Things like quantum computing coming, they're talking about how's it going to break encryption when you've got quantum computers, you know, really going at things.
Yeah. Even just the power of the computers lets us say brute force, passwords.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun actually when you brute force and your computer really spins it up.
That's interesting, you guys. And then you both doing this, not as a passion project, but it's sort of, you know, you mentioned that money's not the big driver for this, but you got a full-time job and you come in and doing this outside of it. Is that you just continue to see this growing as a side project, passion project?
I think that as long as there's, I mean, if nobody wanted it, it would be kind of hard to get energized by it, if you know what I mean. We're doing it because we're helping people, really.
Yeah.
So to me, that's part of the driving force. Creating a business out of it is more of a, you know, justification or verification for continuing to do the work.
Yeah, nice. Nice. Oh, mate. I think it's just very interesting. It's good to see guys that it's not just your bread and butter, what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. Like you're slightly tangent to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that I would do it in my full-time role. I sort of like to keep it it's more of a hobby. I guess a hobby that makes money is a business. So that's, to me, what it is. It's a passion and a hobby, and I enjoy spending my time
doing it. It makes us stronger as well. So if you know, here are some vulnerabilities to be aware of, when you go and write a web app, you're obviously going to have that in mind when you go and write things, right?
100%. You guys would be better in your day-to-day jobs having this on the side.
Yeah, sure. That's right.
100%. Do the security guys in day-to-day pull you guys in from time to time for some help?
No, not really. I mean, security is everyone's responsibility in any job, I guess, they work for. But now there's quite a skilled team of people doing
specialists.
So they don't really need us on that. And we focus, you know, really heavily on certain types of web applications, for example.
Yeah.
We're also offering, we're trying to offer a lot of education on it as well. So we've got, we create a vulnerable server.
Yeah.
And then people can use a guide to, like, effectively penetration test that server.
And you guys offer that at the moment?
Yeah, we do. We've got one. It's a little corny, but it's kind of there's a story to it, and there's some progression. So you can do one, and then there's going to be another one afterwards. Like, there's a series of them.
Yeah, right.
Coming together.
Can people access this online?
Yeah, if they just go to the website.
Yeah.
They can click.
What's the website?
Pinkhome.com.au.
Nice. We'll link that up.
Yeah. And there's a training link in there. But yeah, it's just a bit of fun.
Really, it's a bit of fun.
Yeah. Yes. So it's and maybe it'll spark a bit of interest. It's really designed for those who want to get into it and just want to, I guess, experience what it's like to do a bit of ethical hacking, the penetration testing.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. And so you're trying to, the goal is to basically get into the server and gain root access to it. And you're trying to find, it's capture the flag. So you're trying to find a flag and some piece of information that's in there that we've hidden.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
And you guys build that, set that up?
Yeah, so we've been heavily inspired by what's it called?
Vulnerable.
Vulnerable. Yeah, by Vulnerable. So same thing, you go to there's a site called vulnerable.com, and it allows you to download these virtual machine images.
Yeah.
And it's the same deal. So we've effectively got our own, basically. And it's just got a bit of a story to it.
Very nice. Man, that's really probably check it out myself.
Yeah, there's a scoreboard too. So
I just find it really interesting. And the fact that you guys go and build that, and it's a bit of an educational tool for people, is great. I think it'd be a good little lead gen tool as well for you guys as well. To go, hey, you guys can be building this. You're probably pretty handy at what you do. It might get you to come into our business.
Yeah. It's my fun.
Oh, this is, mate, really interesting, guys. Especially the fact that, hey, this isn't your bread and butter day in, day out. Like, this is, you know, driven by passion. It's interesting. So how long has the business been around for now?
Oh, the security aspect part of it has probably been a year, maybe a little bit over.
18 months.
18 months, about that. And then prior to that, you know,
basically web development.
Guys, and you guys are obviously based locally in Newcastle. What have you seen being based here as an asset, disadvantage to you guys? It doesn't really matter. Obviously, what you guys do can be done from anywhere, but
so
building your business, how do you see Newcastle?
So for me, I mean, I grew up in Armidale, which is a pretty small town. There's not much of a community at all there.
Yeah.
Really, it came down to sort of our group of friends, I guess.
Yeah.
A few people at the university.
Yeah.
Whereas around here, there's a heap of heap of community groups around. You know, we've got these UWE Tech Talks. There's the Coders group, JS Coders group.
Yeah. In comparison to Armdale, it's like being a kid in a candy store. Yeah. There's so much here in Newcastle.
Yeah.
So yeah, we go to the Newcastle Coders group every chance we get.
Yeah.
Which. Yeah, it's great. I love going there.
Yeah, we've had both the organisers on here before.
Yeah, we both enjoyed that podcast.
We attend other events like, you know, DevOps Day. Was it last year?
It was great.
It's great to be part of that community.
That was a really, really well-run event.
It was fantastic.
And there might be a whisper of something similar-ish coming next week. Not DevOps Day, but hopefully another event.
Yeah, I think you'll find us there.
Yeah. There's a definite need for a really well-run tech event in Newcastle, bringing people together. I think that did really well because it had a specific, you know, angle in the DevOps, but
yeah,
it did appeal to a lot of people. So the organizers of that did phenomenally well.
Yeah, I agree. It was a great event. There was even a security
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it had an angle, with, you know, in around DevOps, but it did, you know, there's a lot of different tangents for people to get involved with.
Yeah,
that was super interesting. Yeah, so obviously some advantages coming from small town Armidale to Newcastle, as opposed to, you know, people who came from Sydney to Newcastle, go from, you know, big city to Newcastle. It's called medium size, but you guys are going the opposite way. Have you faced a lot of benefits there for you guys? Obviously, any challenges you've faced?
I guess the talent pool isn't as big here as what you get in the huge cities like Sydney and things like that.
Yep.
And there's not as many businesses around that we can go and sort of approach and things like that. We rely on word of mouth. It's been very hard for us to build trust on the internet and things like that. So
yeah, through advertising.
Yeah, through advertising and things like that. It's
sort
of hard, you know. We're gonna hack your site for a bit of money. Not many people are gonna go straight for that. But if you can sort of meet in person and talk about it, it's a lot easier.
The people that we have talk to that know us from before and trust us, they've been really happy with what we've done for them. And you know, they've talked to other people because they're normally business owners, know other business owners, and that's worked out really well for us. But you know, it is a confronting thing for someone to say that we'll effectively like penetration tests, like we're doing ethical hacking, and so we have to, I guess, build up that trust, and that happens slowly.
Yeah, and it does happen through word of mouth, obviously, like relationships. If somebody can talk to how good you've done for a job for them, and makes it easier for somebody else to come and jump on board. I don't think too many people are buying penetration testing from a website that they've seen, right?
No. I don't think we've had almost any real people contact us through that. There was just one exception where I talked to somebody through a social media site. They didn't know me from a bar, so they were already in a bad situation. Yeah. So,
when people are in a bad situation,
They'll turn to
for help, right?
They were sort of, well, I'm in a lot of trouble already. There's not much more. There's nothing worse you could do to me, so.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys could do some damage if you wanted to. Super interesting. So we mentioned Armidale. You both did the same degree there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Opinions on that degree?
I think with any degree or anything you go and do, you get out of it what you put in. So I think we took things as far as we really could. We really pushed the envelope. We weren't just there to get a piece of paper. We really went out, tried to excel as best we could, and
we took the difficult path, like the more difficult courses, I should say.
Get us a good foundation, I think.
Yeah, it was. It's worth it.
And obviously, we've made some good connections.
Yeah,
we're still friends. We've still got other friends around.
Yeah, and you've now built a business together, so there's a heap of value in it from you, right?
Yeah, I think it's great value.
Yeah, well, I think university can mean a number of things to different people. Education for one, but networking, the social aspect of it, getting to understand how to learn is another aspect. Yeah, but the fact that you guys seem like you've got a lot out of that university degree, how important do you think that's been in your career?
I think to me it's been important, but I don't think it's the only way you have to go. We've known heaps of other professional software developers who don't have a degree and they're just as successful as anyone else.
One of our old managers was an exceptionally good software developer. And
self-taught,
he didn't have a degree at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not absolutely necessary. And I think that even businesses who hire don't necessarily require you to have a degree. If you already know your stuff, then that's probably fine. There are, however, some organizations that do require a degree. It's important to them, especially if they're maybe like an authorized engineering organization. There's a requirement, and even though they might still hire people with a degree, it might potentially limit your ability to do certain roles in that in the organization, like maybe approve software designs or something, for example. So I guess if for anyone who's looking to either go get a degree or skip the degree and just try and get into the workforce, I would say you really have to have a clear idea of where you want to work. I mean, you can always hedge your bets. It's safe to get a degree, gives you a good foundation, but there's nothing better than real life work experience, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Working on your own, figuring things out.
Yeah. Working with other people real life problems. That's the best way, I think, to learn.
Yeah, completely agree. And to your point, working with other people as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, team projects and things like that through university can be a real benefit in mimicking the workforce. You're having to work with other people. It's not just you banging out something by yourself, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen in the workforce either, right? Yeah. You're working in teams only 5% of the time. Yeah. And you know, that ability to work with other people, communicate with other people is a big important part of it.
Yeah.
I also think if you're trying to get into computer science and you're not sure, or software engineering or whatever it is, there's a lot of open online courses nowadays. We did pen testing, course just to as a refresher, just to see what's available, and that was great.
Yeah, there's a lot of university courses becoming free online as well, right? Yeah. You can do some through Stanford and things like that.
MIT.
And
so even when you complete it, you know, there'll be some exam, but it contributes a few credits towards if you wanted to jump in and actually do it.
Yeah,
that's right.
As a qualification.
Yeah. I completely agree. I think it's definitely got a space, but then there's other options available as well. On those other options, you mentioned a couple there, but is there any other informal parts of education you guys have done?
Well, we mentioned VulnHub. If you want to get into security, go check out VulnHub.
Yeah.
Try a few walkthroughs. A lot of them have some really good walkthroughs that say, you know, go run this command, see what it does, step you through how you can slowly get into a system and find some flags.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I have an interest in business as well. Like I'm coupling my computer science, my programming with business. So that's the type of education I steer towards.
Yeah.
But I think that if people in general become software developers, it's always healthy to couple that together with something else. Like, for example, software and law is a growing market as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of legalities behind the cyber and law. Or I partner up with a tax accountant, for example. So software development on its own just gives you the ability to produce something. But unless you have a great idea or can work with someone that, you know, can turn that product into something useful.
Well, there's thousands of apps sitting in the App Store which are, you know, well built.
Yeah.
Who don't have any users, right?
Yeah,
you don't have the product market fit, obviously. Yeah. So that understanding of who are you building this for? What are you building? Who are you building it for?
Yeah.
Either knowing somebody who knows that or partnering with somebody that does that is obviously really beneficial, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can write the best code in the world, but if no one sees it,
that's right.
Yeah, it's no good.
Yeah.
All good. So you guys are both obviously really busy working full-time jobs and then running this type of business. What's some productivity tools? How do you get this done? Let's start with Nick.
So I guess, there's not a lot of time after I get home from a full day at work. So for me, productivity is about having a really clear idea about what I need to actually do, something, you know, smaller modular that I can accomplish. So I don't have a lot of time to procrastinate or muck around. So I use an agile board. It makes it really clear what's front and center needs to be done. I have a pretty reliable, fast laptop. You know, you don't want to be, if you're waiting for something slow, you start to get distracted. It gives you excuses to not get work done. Another thing for me as a developer, I need to make sure my environment is pretty well configured, because if I start pulling down the latest code and my environment's broken for whatever reason, which just happens sometimes, I like to know that. So I use Docker and Ansible at the moment. Just seems to work for me. So that just allows me to containerize my environment and I have a well-defined configuration.
Yeah.
And so that means I can, you know, fire up my application and it works, and I can write in my code and test it. And there's not a lot of knocking around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. What about yourself, Matt?
I think for me, Docker and Ansible are great tools. I can go and break a system and leave it in a weird state and just go, nah, get rid of it, start again, clean, fresh.
Yeah.
It's easy. Also keeping a good wiki. We keep some good documents around that we can, keep track of different things that we...
Yeah, especially
since we follow things like that.
Because we're working quite a few different products, you know, with all their customers.
Yeah.
So keeping a wiki really helps refresh the memory, basically.
Yeah, nice. Does
things differently.
And you guys both contribute to that, obviously.
Yeah, you do, yeah.
Very nice. Any other tools you use, Matt, from a productivity perspective?
From productivity?
Depends how like productive you want to be at penetration testing, right? We use Metasploit, things like
that. Yeah, yeah. So there's, in terms of hacking tools, you know, you can use tools like Searchploit. It's basically a database of common vulnerabilities. You can go use that and use Metasploit to exploit those vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
There's tools like OWASP Zap that just automatically go and try out the top 10 most common vulnerabilities on your website.
Yeah, right.
Help speed that sort of process up a bit.
Very nice.
Yeah, things like that. Yeah.
Nice. And then you guys obviously both learned this as you went. You both did the TULSA course on top of your degrees. Any other forms of education that you've said, whether it be a book or a podcast that you really recommend to people that might have an interest in growing their knowledge around security?
So I've done a couple of Coursera courses as well.
Yeah.
Definitely go look at Coursera. They've got a few things around. Listen to a lot of audio books.
Yeah.
Things like Zero to One by Peter Thiel.
Yeah.
A really good book. Lean Startup.
Yeah, Eric Price.
Yeah.
10X Rule.
10X,
Grant Cardone. That was a really good one. I think a lot of mine are geared more towards the business and leadership.
Yeah, any others on top of those three that you'd mentioned?
I found really valuable if you're into business, the personal MBA was pretty good. It's basically like a full MBA type course compressed into a 13-hour audiobook.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it's good fundamental stuff.
Yeah, I don't think I could put myself through an MBA.
True.
I know some people that have, and touche to anyone that has, because there's some definite hours put into that thing.
Yeah, I think it's been good.
Yeah, that'd be two, three, four books that you'd sort of point people in the direction of. Anything from a pure security perspective? If I'm sitting here right now, I'm listening to this, and I'm a dev, or I work in this, in and around this space, and hey, I've got some interest in that, what would be my first point of call?
I'll definitely go to the OWASP site.
Yeah.
That's your top 10 web vulnerabilities. That's
a great resource.
Fantastic resource. Cyber.gov.au.
Yeah.
It
gives you an idea of, the government stance on it.
Yeah.
And what they're doing.
It's got the ISIN.
And it's got the ISIN.
Information Security Manual.
Yeah, which is effectively like a big comprehensive list of all best practice rules.
How you can secure a system.
How to be secure, yeah.
Definitely go look at things like Searchploit, your list of vulnerabilities there.
Come and check out your website and have a go.
Come check out the website, check out a test.
itnews.com.au has a security section and all the latest cybersecurity news.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's great.
MVD, the vulnerability database, that's another one we use as well.
Yeah, nice. Is there anyone in particular putting out really good content that people should follow?
The ones we just mentioned are pretty good.
Those are our
go-to. Sweet. Not all right. All good. If you guys had to wheel things back and teach yourselves a younger version of yourself something different or something you wish you knew a little bit earlier on in life, what would it be?
Definitely for me, it's sort of seek out opportunities. When you do really well at uni, things, opportunities come your way a little bit, but it's never enough. You gotta really go out there and find things like this, go out and do things. We wouldn't have gotten into security if we hadn't been helping someone out with their website, right? You get out there, you do things, don't be afraid to fail. Failure is just a sign that you're sort of on the right track, I think.
Yeah.
If you're not failing, you're not trying hard enough.
Yeah.
So just get out there, do things. It'll make you grow.
Nice.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think if I could tell my younger self anything, it would be about maybe seeking out mentors as well early. I have a habit of trying to do things myself and figure it out sometimes the hard way. And I know failure is important, and people say you should learn from your own mistakes, but I find that's quite an expensive way of going about learning something. I think if you find someone who's done what you're trying to achieve, it can really accelerate that learning curve. So I definitely would recommend that for anyone starting out. So seek out mentors and become a mentor yourself as well. I think when you teach other people your craft, it really helps cement it for yourself as well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
On that note, then, if people were seeking some mentorship,
definitely. We're happy to help.
What's the easiest way to get in contact with you guys?
Probably go to the website. You can contact us through the website.
Yeah.
And we have Twitter and Facebook as well.
So yeah.
All linked up. All the website.
All right. We'll link that up in the show notes. And that way people can hit that up and hopefully reach out to you if they're looking for I don't know, a little bit more information or some mentorship or just ask questions.
Yeah, we're really happy to help. I think growing that community, it's all about awareness and education. We definitely make our jobs a lot easier too.
Yeah, I think there'll be a growing, it's a growing niche of the community as well, right?
Yeah, it is. I'm really hoping to see more people doing this type of thing soon.
Oh, I've spoken to some other people in this space who are likewise who want to see this growth. It's definitely there's not a massive market there. Yeah. It's still a small segment of the tech niche in Newcastle, but it's growing and will continue to grow.
Yeah.
Well, we'll point people say check out the guy's website, and it's www.pincomb.com.au.
pincomb.com.au.
Yeah. Get in contact with the guys there or do their little test or game online. Yeah. Give that a crack. So, guys, thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah. Thanks a lot, James.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to this episode of New Tech People. To access the show notes, the links to everything we discussed on this episode, visit www.newtechpeople.com.au. Thank you for being a loyal listener. Our next episode will release in a fortnight's time. Thanks again.